Today is, first of all, let's begin. Today is Monday, the 9th of November, 2015. And I'm very happy to see students in front of me because part of the regulars are in America right now. And everyone, there's an exam here tomorrow. So I know we have many listening across the world. Dafka to Monday's class, we have many, many listening. Probably goes into the thousands. But thank God we have an Olam in front of us. That's number one. Number two, it's a special moment because Vic Snow, and he's still Vic Snow at this moment in time, is sponsoring today's shiur. What you don't know, what I didn't know, is that YUTorah.org raises money on the backs of its melamdim, and people sponsor the shiur, and today, Baruch Hashem, Vic is sponsoring the shiur. I also want to mention that the Shaluach, David Eliezeri, who I've spoken about and quoted his books, if you saw Friday's Sichat HaShavu of Chabad, he's the pinup boy in back. And I want to say to Rabbi Eliezeri, who I see is a world-class act, that you're following the Rebbe. I was the pinup boy when did the Rav die? 1993, So 22 years ago after the Rav died, I was the pinup boy. They interviewed the Talmud of the Rav, and I remember my grandchildren were so impressed that my picture appears in Sichat HaShavua. All right. Today, we're going to say some important concepts. Some will love it, some will be upset across the world, but the truth has to be said. But let's begin Shlav Shlav. Last week, we developed the idea, and it's the Sheikh at home. I saw the response. And we all think of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the uniqueness, and who he was. But we sometimes forget that his basic gestalt, his basic core, was that of a Rebbe. And we read some of the material that Professor Jerome Mintzer, Zichrono Livracha, published about the Rebbe, and the miracle stories, and how do we relate to it, the Litvak. And I don't want to comment on a Litvak's relationship, but Rabbi Steinsaltz declares in public that the Rebbe had Ruach HaKodesh. And that's a chassid. And among the stories, there was one story we told. By the way, the story with the washing of the hands of the soldier in Korea, I didn't stress enough that story really put the Rebbe on the map. What you don't realize was that in the mid-50s, orthodoxy was viewed as, if not dead, critically ill. It's not like today, that they're pleading with the Reform to have children. It's laughable. If you don't observe Shabbos, there's no future for the Jewish people, plain and simple. And we all know it. Every survey shows it, and even in the state of Israel, despite Ben-Gurion's legacy, it's amazing what has happened here. But this is the power of Torah and the soul in man that refuses to die out. So that story with the Rebbe told them, be medakdeik in etilat yadayim, and how it saves his life, that story everyone was talking about because it was published in commentary, published by a Reform rabbi, Herbert Wiener. Of course, at the time, now let me pronounce his name right, Herbert Wiener. At the time, he was a secret Orthodox Jew heading back to Torah mitzvah, but he was a Reform rabbi. I knew him. I was an idiot. I told you. I smacked my face right in this classroom a week or two ago because of my attitude. I spoke against Reform in front of his sons. I was an idiot. It's not the time. Be above it. Learn from Chabad. But I was a Litvak then. I was, as much as I knew about Chabad, it still was very little compared to today. So that story put the Rebbe on the map, and I want to stress that. And orthodoxy and what was happening in Crown Heights, and that's why I wound up spending a Shabbos in Crown Heights, because I was a very interesting, as a kid, interested in Yiddishkeit. I came from a background where, again, it's hard for you to understand that I'm not a Baal Tshuva, but my home was not strictly halachic. And that's the way almost every home was then. I can, all the famous names of YU today, outside of the Reb Heschel Schechter, was a rabbi's son. And rabbi's sons either went good or went bad. There was no middle ground with them. Either they loved their parents or they were in rebellion. Freud made a good living out of rabbis' children. I've told you more than once, there's a Yiddish expression, a rav's a tochta. I don't want to explain to you what that expression means. So we all came from homes that, yes, there was Yiddishkeit and Kiddush and Kashrut, but Shabbos was broken, and I was so inquisitive, and we heard about Chabad, something's happening in Crown Heights, and I spent the Shabbat there, which great influence on my life, as I write about in Washington, that, again, I can't repeat it now, but read Washington, that Dusiach with that anonymous Chabadnik, I don't even know his name, but that became a lodestar for me in Hashkafa and helped to relate to Yiddishkeit. Now, the story about the dream that the Rebbe tells his chassid in Israel in Kfar Chabad, go and visit this writer and tell him it's time you did tshuva and you had a dream that you should come back. Believe it or not, I got information from Chabadnikim that that person, the story is black and white, there's sources for it. The name of the person, we were wondering, who is this writer? It's not what I said, maybe it's Avraham Shalansky, was the Rebbe's first cousin. It was Yaakov Zerubbabel. Yaakov Zerubbabel have a whole, and I remember the name well, he died in 67. He was a writer, he was a politician, he was a leftist, he was a Chabadnik in his youth. His hatred of religion was overwhelming. Even when he appeared at a wedding or a funeral where everyone else put on a kippah, he refused to put on a kippah. And this is the chassid, the Rebbe asked to visit him, was a distant cousin. And the cousin went and visited him and told him, and he stood up when he read the letter from the Rebbe, and the chassid saw he was transformed. And they claim the wuhi hearing shiva. You can read the story. I don't want to go into more detail now. But Rebbe Yaakov Zerubbabel is the name of the person that the Rebbe said he had a dream, and it's time you came back. Unbelievable what scholarship. There was a whole interview. The person who got the letter from the Rebbe, go and visit him, later gave an interview and spoke about it and revealed the details. Then I made the point, and a golden point that the Rabbi Dr. Menachem Breyer taught me when I bothered him and I said to him, Rebbe, I said, Your father-in-law is the world-famous Biana Rebbe. Your son, who I know from childhood on, I taught his sister, I taught his brother-in-law, the kid ate in my hand, is going to become the next Biana Rebbe. And then already I knew a little bit about Rebbe. And where do you get the guts, the chutzpah? A chassid comes into you for your chidit and asks your advice. And you tell him what to do, you tell him who to marry, you tell him which job to take. Come on, how do you do that? And by the way, a Talmud who got married because I put a gun in his back of about 40 plus years ago right here in Yerushalayim, just called me the other day, asked me a certain question, I gave him an answer. He doesn't regret that I put a gun in his back. So it's because of Rabbi Breyer's sense I was able to do it. So he said to me, and never forget it, remember I ended off the shiur, the task of a Rebbe is not to tell you what to do. No, the task of a Rebbe is to see what you want to do and give you the self-confidence to go further. And that is a fabulous answer. And ain't hachinami. This fellow, imagine the night before his wedding, he's getting jittery. Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? Thank God, they're grandparents today. So I learned that from Rabbi Breyer, and that's the Rebbe. And that you saw with that interview with Chaim Bravender and Herbie Bravender is far from a chassid, believe me. You all know him. I called him a cynical Litvak, and people in Rome told me that's the most apt description of Rabbi Dr. Chaim Bravender. And you see, when he went into the Rebbe, and the Rebbe tells him, go into Chinuch, a fascinating interview with Rabbi Bravender about his golden hours with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And I want to go further on this topic. And a beautiful gift fell into my hands, again, from one of the Chabadnikim listening. And as I mentioned to you, Chabadnikim have a minhag today. When they have a marriage, the real, you know, the Chabadnikim b'fnim, the Lamdonim, the Urein, the Shleimim, they give out a gift at the wedding. And this gift was given out at a recent wedding. It's a biographical study of the family. It's called Reb Moshe's Saris. And let me explain to you what that means. It's about this Jew. They just celebrated his first Yahrzeit, and his, let me just check, I believe it's his granddaughter. It's his granddaughter's wedding, and in honor of the granddaughter's wedding, they gave out this beautiful biographical sketch of Reb Moshe Saris. Now, Reb Moshe Saris, it's like a movie that a Talmud, Herbie Cohn, I think, Rabbi Cohn, lent me some movies, and my wife wants to see movies, and he's a big expert on movies. One of the movies was The Concert. So you have to understand, when you watch The Concert, you're watching something, but you're watching it very superficially. When I watched The Concert, it brought back so much emotion and feeling, because it's about these Russians who were persecuted by the communists. They lost their jobs, and finally they're able to give a concert in the free world after the fall of the communist empire. And it's a very funny movie. The plot is very funny, but the message is extremely powerful. This Reb Moshe Saris, first of all, let me explain the name. His father was executed by Stalin 1937. And once again, I call your attention to all the Chabadnikim who were executed in the 30s, the purge, Stalin. It's beyond words. A Talmud listening in Australia told me he's going to die. I suggested a book come out with biographies of these individuals. Now, Reb Moshe Katzenelnbogen's father was eliminated by Stalin. His mother raised him. That's why he's called Reb Moshe Saris. It's like the Mashah, Reb Shmuel Edels. Why is he called Edels? Because his mother was widowed and she raised him. She was Moseret Nefesh to raise him. The name Chayat, when you hear the name Chayat, it's really Chayas. It means someone who was raised by his widowed mother, Chaya. So he was called Reb now Sarah Katzenelnbogen was known as the Mumma, the aunt. But in Yiddish, in my family, those of you from who know Dr. Josh Daniel, everyone know Dr. Josh Daniel, he's a dentist, lives in Efrat. Josh Daniel is my cousin. His great-grandmother was known as the Mumma. She lived to 102. She was a tzaddikit on American soil. The entire family revered her. When my grandfather spoke of her, my Zayda mentioned the Mumma at Geshuckel, that Getsitit, that Getreselt. Don't know how to say it in English, at Getreselt, the Mumma. So she was known as the Mumma. She was a great, great lady. And without going into any more detail, but if you read David Eliezeri's book, you'll see the major role she played after World War II in getting Jews from Russia to Poland, and from Poland they got out, they were able to go on to America, to Israel, and she ultimately is sent to labor camp, and she dies a young lady yet, but she was Moseret Nefesh to raise her son, who was a first-rate Talmud Chacham all his formative years. Remember, under the communists, it's beyond words how these people were able to learn and amount to be something to become Lamdanim. Now, in 1971, he finally got out. When he got out already, there was one brother in, I believe, in Midwest America, one brother in London, one brother in Israel, all of them Chabadnikim 100%. And in 1971, he comes to... He got out. You have to understand what Russia was. He gets to London. His brother in London. He's fighting to get to America. It takes time. He has to get a visa. Finally, he gets to America, 71. And he has his first yechidat with the Rebbe. 1 o'clock in the morning, he walks in and he makes a shechiyanu. B'shem u'malchut. The Rebbe says, amen. The Rebbe asks him, watch the way the Rebbe thinks. This is yechidat. Right? And he's revealing the conversation. Look how differently the Rebbe thinks from all of us. The Rebbe says to him, did you bring your tefillin with you? And he says, yes. And the Rebbe says, you should have left your tefillin there. The Jews in Russia need it. So he says to the Rebbe, he says, Rebbe, in the cemeteries, there's suitcases filled with tefillin. There are so much tefillin in Russia. We need it here. And, the Rebbe says, no, you should have left it. Then the Rebbe asks him, what else did you bring? He says, I brought out 2 Sifrei Torah. And once again, the Rebbe gives him an argument. Why did you bring them out? He says, and this I saw with my own eyes. He says, in the main synagogue in Moscow, Akhapova Street, the one official functioning synagogue, I'm using communist terminology, there was a room filled with hundreds of Sifrei Torah, if not thousands, a whole attic-like. You have no idea from all the shuls that were shut down. Why did they need Sifrei Torah? Then he tells the Rebbe, one Sefer Torah he sold when he got to London, and that covered his tickets. He was able to get to New York, and it covered some living expenses. And the Rebbe told him, oh, you just came out? We pay. We have a special fund, the Rebbe said. The first time a Russian Jew who gets out comes to see the Rebbe, we pay for the tickets. Of course, he didn't want to take the money, but then the Gabayim told him, this is the nohag here, this is what we do, the practice, and you have to take the money. Now, and then he says, looking back, he thought the Rebbe was off the wall. He's telling him, leave your tefillin, leave the Sifrei Torah. He says, look how the Rebbe knew when he uses the words, Ruach HaKodesh, that the day would come that they're going to request tefillin and Sifrei Torah in Russia. And you see, this miracle, we are not thankful enough. Ein bal hanes makir ben Yisrael. I mean, you can't start to understand this. When I was a kid growing up, who would ever dream? I remember there was a Sputnik, and afterwards Russia had a whole exhibition, like a World's Fair in New York, and then in Washington, and America was able to do something in Russia. This was after Stalin, in the mid-50s. And I remember going to the exhibition, and you wrote a message, and I wrote, let my people go, let the Jews out. Who would ever dream what would happen? So many Balei Tshuva. And who would ever dream just last week or 2 weeks ago, Putin gave the highest award, that's the, like the Congressional Medal of Honor, gave the award, Danny, to Rabbi Lazar, Beryl Lazar, the chief shaluach in Russia. So he says, only the Rebbe would have this Ruach HaKodesh, leave the tefillin and leave the Sifrei Torah. Now, here's where we come back to Rabbi Breyer and the advice he gave me and what he explained to me. Then he turns to the Rebbe with a very basic question. Where should he live? Has a brother in Israel, a brother in the Midwest, a brother in London, and where should he go? So the Rebbe starts asking him, have you been in touch with your brothers? He said, yes, but the only one who offered me a job is the brother in London, where the Lubavitch school said they would hire me as a Rebbe, as a Malamed. So the Rebbe said, what's the question? You have a job, you have Panasa, you have family, you go to London. And you see, it's a typical example where when you look at it logically, there is no other choice for him. But when the Rebbe told him, it gives him a shot in the arm. It gives him confidence. This is what to do. And he went on to become a Malamed, and he was a well-known Abaki in Shulchan Aruch, and he spent all his years teaching in London, I believe. Afterwards, when he retired, he wound up, of course, in New York to be near the heart. So this is a very, very beautiful document which reveals what Yechidut with the Rebbe is all about. It reveals the Rebbe's thinking, and I have to tell you, who would have ever thought, you know, the Rebbe is mad at him. Why'd you take out tefillin? Leave it there. You know how many zugot tefillin haben sich gewalget, were all over Russia, what we saw. Yes, one of the concepts that we developed, both with the Mossad and out of London, I write about it in London, the whole operation that began with Ernie Hirsch, I write about it in Washington. If I can tell you between the lines, my boss, my mafil, my handler, the man who got Pras Yisrael for what he did for Russian Jewry, so Aryeh Kroll, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, he was very angry at Ernie Hirsch. There was a Ruth Bloch. I just met her this Shabbos. I just met her coming back from Mincha. And these were people that worked independently. Ruth Bloch out of Switzerland, Ernie Hirsch out of London. And the boss was very angry. And his point of view was that no one really knew what was going on in Russia, like the TIV, like the Mossad's branch. Because I can tell you, Israeli intelligence, if America had to admit that they found out that the Russian plane was bombed with a bomb put into the plane, they admitted, they learned it now, 99.99% certain. And who told them? Israeli intelligence. They had the phone conversations between the Dash and the people in Sharm el-Sheikh. God have mercy, what they're capable of doing and how the world takes it in stride and vizehuzeh. And they had to admit, if you hear the news yesterday, today. So it's really what was going on, you see, at the center in Tel Aviv, where I told you there was more security than my getting into the army base where I was a regular assigned to. There was more security getting into the Mossad's building that housed the operation on Russia. So the telefax machines were working every minute of the day. Information was coming in from all over the world. Russia, any country in Russia, Britain, what they sensed was happening there, France, and the boss knew more than anyone. And he didn't want outsiders working because he was worried stiff they would upset the apple cart. All right, there's something to be said for that. On the other hand, I have to say that when I wrote Washington, I wanted to do a chesed to two people whose lives, to a certain degree, were made 1,000 times more difficult. And that's Ernie Hirsch and Ruth Bloch. Ruth Bloch, she's a twin, sister lives in Alon Shvut, large family. Ruth was a teenager when she went to Russia the first time. She couldn't rest. Every minute she worked to help her brethren there. She never married. She never totally dedicated. And that's why I write about her. Ernie Hirsch, Ernie and Linda, his whole life, he lost his business. He practically went bankrupt. His whole life was helping the Jews, Russia, You're just sitting here. You don't know who his late wife was. Sadeka Jesoto, and I write about her and one other woman, Janet Levin. And people would say to me, why didn't you write about me? Remember what I answered? I answered, I write about these two women because they're no longer alive. You want to be dead? Oh, the minute I gave that answer, Baruch Hashem. You don't know what it did to these people. Yitz's wife came back. She became a one-woman show around the clock. Phones from when? From 7 in the morning to 11 at night, used furniture, and Russians picked it up, delivered it, people coming with nothing. It's not Nefesh B'Nefesh people coming from Timek. So this interview is overwhelming, and it's the Rebbe and the encouragement. And he lived in London. I can understand why. Had a job, had a brother. That brother got him the job. It shows you that brother cared more than anyone else, had the ability. But the Rebbe gave him the encouragement. Okay, Ad kan. We're about to begin a burning issue that is burning more than ever. I'm holding in front of me emails that I've received, articles that have appeared in the last few weeks. If you saw Friday's post, the front page, the quarter of the page, Rabbi Riskin attacking the RCA, the feminist issue. A Talmud sent me an article that just appeared that it's beyond comprehension. This is the tragedy of the computer, that anyone can publish any idiocy they want. Anything. Anything goes. Here's an article. Yes to Zionism, no to feminism, with a big question mark, accusing some people like Rakefe, that you changed the Torah, became a Zionist, and you can't change the Torah and become a feminist. Couldn't believe what I read here. Here's an article appeared in Our Friends, the forewords. Anything dealing with Yiddishkeit is alien to the forward. They're moving forward and leaving everything else behind. Do you want me to leave our Yiddishkeit? An open letter to the RCA, women who want to be rabbis. I want to make a statement, and I'm not going to go into background now. It would take me an hour. You all know I trust what's happened in RCA, the vote, and the Agudat Yisrael, what they've come out with, etc., etc. But I do want to tell you, I just went into my time machine. Oh, you don't know, I have a time machine in my office. You sit in it and you punch in the year you want to be, and within a second you're there. So I went back to 1925 to a nice little Orthodox synagogue in, you can have any town in America. And I met with the ladies' auxiliary, wasn't called the sisterhood yet. And the women said to me, Rabbi, we don't want to be harmful or fresh, but we go to college today. We're all high school graduates. We're all getting bachelors. We all can work in the workforce. We all can smoke cigarettes. Virginia Slims went to jail. We don't today. Why do we have to sit behind the machitza? Why are we second-rate citizens? And as much as I try to convince them, there's a concept of tradition, Torah Shebal Peh, Mesorah, what I spoke about yesterday, Az Yoshim Moshe, Miriam with the women, separation, this is Judaism, this is Torah, this is our heritage. I got nowhere. And synagogue after synagogue took down the machitza, mixed the sexes, and we all know what's become of conservative Judaism 90 years after my meeting with these women. Nothing has changed. We're living in two worlds. And we have to stand up and shout and be proud of what Torah is about. And I want to quote Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim said of art, you know, people give pilpulim and people try to explain a difficult shaila on the Gemara. And Reb Chaim said, if something walks like a donkey, speaks like a donkey, looks like a donkey, eats like a donkey, don't give me any pilpulim, it is a donkey. Yiddishkeit, from time immemorial, we have total equality as far as who is more holy, who is greater, a man or a woman. Zachar v'nekeva, Baram, totally equal. Responsibilities, religious configuration is different. Now, when Western values challenge us, being a toshav, living in the big world, we have to know how to stand up against these Western values, that we are not Westerners, these are not our values. Do you know what's going on in America today with same-sex bathrooms, with same-gender bathrooms, with transgender bathrooms? Do you have any idea the lawsuits, the rulings, the Supreme Court, the homosexuals getting married? Do you recall the Gemara in Chulin or not? Tzadi Bet, it's an open Gemara. That it's one thing, homosexual people will always sin. They just arrested a man who's a Shomer Shabbos, I'm told, for killing his wife. It's she's the granddaughter, the late wife is the granddaughter of a musmach of why you in my time, one of the greatest minds, a Chaver Rabban Lichtenstein, went on to a great career in science, mentioned as a candidate for a Nobel Prize. His granddaughter was murdered. The husband now finally was arrested right before he was ready to inherit her. The time limit, they finally got the evidence on him. And they were talking on the Upper West Side. We're talking people, names we know. It's unbelievable. No, we usually have murderers. You have homosexuals. You have whatever. You have robbers, thieves. I don't have to go further. But we have a Yom Kippur. We don't change the Torah. But we can't change the Torah. I say to the women who wrote the article, castigating the rabbis who won't let them become rabbis. It's nothing to do with inferiority. It has to do, when you use the title rabbi, it implies a woman can do whatever a rabbi can do. A male rabbi can do certain things a female rabbi can't do. A female rabbi, etc., etc., she's limited. Beit Din, Eidet Lekiyum Davar, etc. On the other hand, women can do great matters, Tarat Mishpacha. It's in her hands. Gidul Banim, education. Chava v'hi ein kol chai. And today, you're absolutely right. Life has changed, we live longer. Women go to college, women go to university, women get graduate school degrees. Women want to learn Torah, adarabba v'adarabba. You want to express yourself? Fine, but it has to be within the context of Devar Hashem Zu Halacha. And today, women, Yoatzat Halacha, what's wrong? Accepted all over the RCA, YU, OU world, State of Israel as well. Yoatzat. In the rabbinic courts, my daughter was the first one, paved the way. My daughter said right away when she was interviewed many years ago, she said, I'm not a feminist. Everything I will do is in the halachic context. I'm here to help women and men as well. She's represented men. She's had, I don't have to tell you, the Knesset, the whole law, the Aguna law in Israel was written against men. And my daughter had a case where the man was suffering from a woman who wouldn't take a get, and the law was revised that all the strictures that can be applied to a man for refusing to give a get can be applied to a woman for refusing to take a get. when the Beitin has asked her, has commanded her, demanded of her that she take a get. So there are many ways a woman can express herself. Not only that, you have the great women in Israel, Nechama Leiva, which we spoke about yesterday. What about the late Rebbetzin Batsheva Kanyevsky? Have you ever heard that woman speak? Go to YouTube and see who Reb Chaim Kanyevsky's wife was. Men and women, underline the word men, waited online on Friday morning to get a bracha from the Rebbetzin. You have today Noah, the Breslava, Tamima, graduate of Chorev. These women have an unbelievable following, but they don't call themselves rabbis. Ayud Maria Chabad, they solved the problem. Shaluach Shlucha. It's fabulous. We're still looking for the right title. I like the title already, Yoatzat Halacha Karan. So if a shul hires a woman to deal with problems of geirut, intimate problems of marriage conciliation, and has to deal with women, you know that I've said long ago, I would ask any male rabbi meeting with a woman privately today, because lo achshe shadar, according to what we learned yesterday, unfortunately, too many rabbis have created scandals. So women have a big role. You can call them yoatzat datiyot. That would parallel yoatzat hilchatiyot, that yoatzat halacha. But the title rabbi is misleading. It has nothing to do with inferiority or prejudice. It has to do with the reality of Dvar Hashem zu halacha. And there's a lot more to this. Tzniut involved. I'm not exactly a big fan of a woman getting up in front of a congregation in the middle of davening before Musaf and giving a drasha. And all right, there's a big difference between a woman 72 years old and in the prime of life 32 years old. And I need not elaborate, but I will only tell you that I was asked many years ago about Shira Chadasha by a very prominent person, a big member of Yeshiva University's Board of Trustees, and there were other people at the table, and Rabbi Rakefet, what is wrong with a woman davening for the Amid Kabbalat Shabbat, Shira Chadasha? And you remember my answer. I looked at this person and said, what is wrong if she's a 26-year-old woman and goes into ecstasy and is jumping up and down? Are you looking at her or looking at your sitter? If you're looking at her, you're not a Jew. If you're looking at your sitter, you are not a man. You are not a member of the male species. So you understand there's a certain fineness here. Don't let Obama's concepts overrun you, or Cohn Kerry's concepts knock out Torah. And you want to talk down this whole question about Chovevei Torah. Gentlemen, my dear students, if it looks like a donkey, and I don't want to be offensive, if it looks like a lion and acts like a lion and eats like a lion, I don't have to quote Reb Chaim, it is a lion, plain and simple. You're talking about Chovevei Torah? I told you. I came back from the States. I was shaking. A graduate of YU identified with Chovevei Torah makes a shechiyonu and writes a whole article how overjoyed he is that the Supreme Court ruled that homosexuals can get married. Where are we? Where are we at? Ongoing revelation. That is a restatement of Solomon Schechter's Catholic Israel. It is no different whatsoever. Where are we? On the blogs, just appeared a story. I hope it's not true. Again, I don't know. I can't believe what I read, but it's on the... People are writing it that a week ago Sunday, the founder of Chovevei Torah was Masada Kedushin in the atrium in Muncie, and it was a double ring ceremony under the chuppah. Now, how can a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik perform a wedding like that? The brachot, seven brachot, two by men, five by women, under the chuppah. So please, you can do what you want. There's freedom of choice. There's bechira chafshit. Our whole concept of religion is based upon bechira chafshit. But call a spade a spade. That's not open orthodoxy. Rakefet is open orthodoxy. In my classroom, I don't maledict different hashkafas. That's neoconservatism. That is trampling the halacha. And it breaks my heart. Zionism came about because for 2,000 years, Jews davened and said, V'tachezener einenu b'shulach latzion b'rachamim. Because Jews benched and said, U'b'nei Yerushalayim y'hakodesh. Because Jews said, Ani ma'min b'yamuna shulema b'viyat ha-mashiach. That's how Zionism came about. Yes, it began a secular brand of Zionism, but its conception, its origins, Atarat Hashem Tamima. And look what Zionism has evolved into, that Baruch Hashem, now in the Tzanchanim, they just established a Gedud Haredi. Could you imagine? It's beyond words, Baruch Hashem. Forget about the Tzionim Datiyim. Forget about the Rakafat. Forget about our whole creation of an unbelievable Torah, Al Admat HaKodesh. The Haredi world, little by little, going to Machon Lev. 1,600 Haredim studying and essential matters, science, computers, math, physics, building a state, Yishuv Haaretz. Absolutely, yes to Zionism. Feminism, I'm the biggest feminist in the world. I raised only daughters. I taught tens of thousands of women, but within the halachic context, not Obama's concepts. Okay. The RCA did what it had to do. Believe it or not, I'm told that our class here had some impact because some of the students listening voted the way they voted because of the press conference here. This article is right in the news. Here, this is from Yisrael Hayom, less than a week ago, 4/11. Aliyah Mashmutit B'Giyus Datiyot L'Tzahal. And here's a picture of Brigadier General Rachel Wiesel, maybe related to Ellie. She is the ranking female officer in the Army, Brigadier General Tat Aluf. She is Shomeret Shabbat 100%, raised in B'nai Brak in a Mizrahi home, B'nai Akiva, the Army, an entire career in the Army. And she spoke at a kinnus of religious girls being drafted, and she spoke in terms that over 1,600 religious girls are now in the Army, the various units, and the Army is doing everything possible so that they can have a total religious lifestyle. So as we said, there's a revolution underway. This is problems that are right here with us now. Okay, now, these questions, it's nothing new. It's the breakdown of society after World War II, the 1960s into the 70s. You don't need me to talk about it. Suddenly America is luxury, and the youth is rebelling, make war, not love. And there's an expression in Yiddish, azeh v'sekritzel zich, azeh yidl zich. What happens in the Gentile world or the world of the Toshav, 10, 15 years later, hits the world of the Ger. Today it's even quicker because there's one world, one universe, one computer. All the websites are available from the United States through Russia. So this is a reality. It hit the religious world in the 70s. What is unbelievable is how the Rav and the Rebbe reacted. And let me just say a few words about Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. As you know, in Maimonides, he insisted that the girls learn Gemara exactly like the boys. I had a student in Machon Gold, and she was a Maimonides graduate, and endless boys would come over and tell me they were her chavruta. Finally, this girl, very nice girl, brilliant girl, nice looking girl, wonderful family, and she's not getting married. So people who knew her from Boston told her, you know, you have to pick one boy and marry him. It's nice to have boys for chavruta, but that doesn't solve the problem of marriage and children. Baruch Hashem, she picked a very fine boy, and their grandparents today living in Ramat. But I remember her as my student, Machon Gold, and I remember vividly the boys coming over. She was my chavruta. This was the Rav's innovation in Maimonides. He was very insistent upon it. He felt that the girls go to college, the girls are exposed to the big world, and the Rav felt very strongly, like a Litvak, the answer is in learning Torah. In Stern College in 77, it was a picture that the public relations department of Yeshiva wouldn't let out of its hands for years. I once wanted to publish it. They wouldn't let me. They were worried with the swing to the right while you would be put in Cherem another 10 times over in Flatbush and Borough Park. No, Borough Park doesn't bother with YU. It's more Flatbush that would put into Cherem. So the picture of the Rav giving the first shiur of Gemara in Stern College. And that's the way the Rav took on the challenge. I need not tell you that we've gone way beyond the challenge today. It's much greater. The Rav is not here. And I quoted to you at the press conference also, a Chovevei Torah Talmud of mine, who's now in Chovevei Torah, supportive Chovevei Torah, had the chutzpah, the gall, and the indecency. You have to have a little sensitivity. Who you're talking to, forget, all right, you disagree with Rakefet, that's your privilege. But he's a Talmud of the Rav. He lives with the Rav daily. So he says to me, oh, Rabbi Soloveitchik functioned last in the 70s. He's not relevant today, quote, end quote. So we got to call a spade. The lion is a lion. The donkey is a donkey. Torah is Torah, and neo-orthodoxy is neo-orthodoxy. And you will see there's no turning back the clock anymore. Unfortunately, Rabbi Golden wrote a whole article. He's crying. He's all upset. Halavai, we could turn back the clock. It's a reality. We have to live with it. We're not going to turn back the clock. It's a movement. It's snowballed. It's come down the mountain. It's picked up. Biblical criticism, everything you can think about, has now come out in the Chovevei Torah, General Weltanschauung Outlook, etc. How did the Rebbe approach it? And here you'll see the difference between the Rav and the Rebbe, and it all goes back to where they're coming from. A Litvak, and I take the blame, I'm a Litvak, Torah learning, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein once gave a whole shmuis on army commanders, like Rashi Yeshiva. What does a Rashi Yeshiva want out of you? Learn and more time and more time. And an army commander, drill and practice. The better you practice, the greater you'll be in battle. You follow me, Donnie? And they're right, we got to find that happy compromise. It's a problem with Hezdi Yeshiva. Where do you draw the line? How many years have grandsons felt they cheated the world because they only did the 16 months instead of 2 years at least? All right, my family has paid its price. We're making the Birchat Shechayanu with the Tzah. Thank God we're all alive. But it's an interesting question, a Litvak. The Rebbe, mitzvah, do a good deed. Tutepis, Yiddish, as the Rav's Reverend Chedi used to say, and do it with feeling. The Rebbe in the 1970s introduced a fabulous concept. He took a concept which is totally feminine, totally dominated by women, and said every woman has to light Shabbat candles, even a little child, and certainly a woman from 12 years on. Kol ein ubat madlika Neirot Shabbat. Now just think about that concept. He gave every girl seeking. Now, but it's much deeper than that. You see, it's not just you're lighting Shabbos candles. A girl is lighting Shabbos candles out in Minneapolis. She's going to ask, what is Shabbos about? It's more than the candles. It's bringing Shabbos into every lady's home. Spiritual configuration. Genius. Simply genius. And I need not tell you, this went on today in every shopping mall in Israel, perhaps in certain shopping malls in America. There are the Chabadnikiyot giving out Neirot Shabbat to the women. It's a beautiful sight to see. How much light this brought into the world. And this is the genius of the Rebbe. And here I want to be very sharp, and I want to say something that no one has been able to refute. Unfortunately, in our Torah world, there are many viewpoints, but little basic honesty. Anyone, a naive, wonderful individual in Teaneck asked me the other day, over the phone, I didn't see him in person. He's a wonderful individual. I'm very fond of him. But he comes from a more right-wing world, and he says, how can people do this, the Gedolim? Well, look at the website, Bill, Bolam Shel Charedim. Just look at that one website, and you'll see about the Gedolim. And as I've told you more than once, if just 10% is true, it's a tragedy. And I know Chaim Shulfer, I know the author, I know him quite well. I yet knew his father, and his first marriage was to a student of mine. But we have so much animosity for each other. What's going on today in the Litvish world, and this is beyond comprehension. I can't even use the words that they use in Bnei Brak about the people in Shari Chesed, and I cannot use the words that the people where Professor Morty Tarrigan lives say about the Jews in Bnei Brak. And I couldn't believe it. It was just Schultz. I thought, all right, Schultz is making it up. It's in the paper. It's in the world. That their words, these are using God. Have mercy. There's no spiritual honesty. Why can't we say, this is my point? There are other points of Bavakasha. Respect. The Rebbe was very heavily attacked, and I'll never forget this, and I can't forgive it. Can't forgive it. Remember the Litvisha. What? Women are lighting candles. Brachot levatala. What did the Rebbe do? Apikursis. I want to read a source to you. And I'm going to ask you to guess where this source is from. I'll give you the exact comments. Just want to read it first. It's talking about Hatlakot Neira. Now, by the way, I don't want to be in Amaretz. If you don't have a wife and you're all alone in the Kveis, Natan, you don't have a wife yet. No, what do you do about Shabbos candles in the dormitory?
Depends on the week.
What do you do here? Let me hear. Yeah, that's so. You ask a lady to have you in mind. If you want to be a tzaddik, you'll give her a shekel, contribute towards the cost. So yes, Shabbos candles is a din in Oneg Shabbat, right? You all understand that the Rav used to say he judges a person's spiritual tenacity by how many lights he leaves on in his house for Shabbos. Says if he's a cheapskate. But a person who really loves Shabbos leaves the lights on, you understand? In more rooms, not just one little room. I remember I once looked into a house on Washington Avenue, Taka Shemesh Shabbos. They were literally sitting in the dark on Shabbos. So, all right, but the mitzvah, nevertheless, Hadlakat Neirot, is essentially a woman's mitzvah. You all know the Mishnah in Bamen Matlekin. It's the woman's responsibility. Chala, Nida, and Hadlakat Neirot. I once was in Leningrad under the communists. So the Kogan family, Reb Yitzchak, his daughter, he named her Chana, Chala, Neirot, Nida, Hadlakat Neirot. The three mitzvot of a woman. Al Hanashim Mutalet Mitzvah Zubiyoter. And the person here, the Gadol, is writing, quoting the Mishnah I just quoted to you, And Katav HaRambam Sham, why is it, he's quoting the Rambam Hilchot Shabbos, Perekei Halacha Gimel, why are women Mipnei Shehein Mitzuyot Babayet Va'oskot B'tzachei Habayet. Look at Neirad, Kibud V'yonik Shabbat has to do with the house has to look differently for Shabbos, smell differently for Shabbos, and this is a mitzvah that essentially is the domain of the feminine creation. And he goes on, Uvenot Yisrael, Nohagot Labareich, Kol Achat Biatzma, Af Kishehein Eitzel Iman. Young Jewish girls, even though their mother is saying the bracha, Benot Yisrael are nohagot levareich b'fnei atzmam. 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds. What do you mean, Ogler? But the husband, what about? He said, no, the husband, I don't make a bracha. Now that Dafka, I can't go to the Kotel because the walk is too long for me. So I'm in the house where my wife lights candle. I'll take the match, throw it away. Well, I should make a bracha too. I'm also chaya. No, it's the women's domain. But the girls make a bracha. Mikomokom habanot mipnei shehem nitztavot yoter. They're the ones that are really commanded to light Shabbos candles. They're the ones in charge of the kibud v'yomek. Each one. V'varchot kol achad ve'achad. Wow. If I talk like a feminist, anti-male. But every girl. No? Who was I just quoting from? What do you say, Yomo? Did you leave me that comment on Shabbos? I went through it. I'll talk about it next week. But, no. What do you say? Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Chiyo Michal Epstein, Nevadika Rav, Aruch HaShulchan, Hilchot Shabbos, Siman Reish Samach Gimel, Sifkaten Zayin. Reish Samach Gimel, Sifkaten Zayin. Vic, could you elucidate for the class who was Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein? A chassid? A Lubavitcher? An absolute, total mitnaged, part of the Nitziv's family, product of the Lushan. And people had the chutzpah to attack the Rebbe? That's what's said about Yiddishkeit today. Politics, self-interest, amratzit, plays a role in all our public pronouncements, in all our teachings, and that's very sad. So give the Rebbe all the credit in the world. He comes from his point of view, from Hasidus, from everything we spoke about, Dira, B'tachtonim, calling ubat, madlika, neirat shabbat. And I have to tell you, this has gone much further today. You see in the New York Times, occasionally advertisements on Friday, from people who support Chabad, telling the girls what time Shabbat is. It has brought acknowledgement, feeling, concern for Shabbat to hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Jews who, without this, would not have had the gumption, the jump shot to get involved with Hadlakat Neirat Shabbat.
Should young girls light too or what?
So that's interesting. That question has come up. Should they light? So some light one, because the mother is ready lit too. Or some light two because they should know Minig Yisrael is to light two, Shema V'Zachar. I can tell you an interesting story. with my own family, but I won't get through it without crying. My wife, you know, we raised our daughters, you know, when I left yeshiva, when I was kicked out of yeshiva, you went into the chaplaincy right away, right? And I went into the rabbinate. So we were raising our children far from any Yiddishkeit, Maplewood, South. Who would ever dream one day in Maplewood, South Orange, they'd be an Erev? So my wife was very makpid, you know, to give them a feeling of Yiddishkeit. So, I mean, like every Shabbos for me, they don't like Shabbos and singing. And believe me, I don't sing today. But then the kids, you wanted them to feel Yiddishkeit and to light candles. So little girls, they like candles. So we had a Shabbos bar mitzvah, Rabbi Shulson's son Jay, later my student, Rabbi Jay Shulson today, a bar mitzvah in Long Beach, I think. Well, one of the kosher hotels, Washington Hotel, I don't know if it exists today. So we were there, Shabbos, in a kosher hotel, a Shomer Shabbos hotel. We weren't the only ones there. There were outsiders there. So Malka and these little girls, there were three little girls already lighting Shabbos candles. The little girls lit two, each one lit two little candles. And a Yid, a survivor, saw it. He was overwhelmed. He came, the Hemshechiyot, the continuity, our answer to Hitler, and all that goes with it, as I've said many times, Mendafkin Vaita. So you got to give the Rebbe credit. On that level, something else the Rebbe instituted. And you see, here too is the Hasidic overtone. The Rav teaching Gemara in Stern College. Okay. Giving the girls a fabulous curriculum in Maimonides. His own daughters. You know, he used to say, I'm told about Tova, that she was the greatest student he ever had. His own children studied with him, no different. Friday night, the children, Rabbi Lichtenstein, when he was in Harvard, and his son, my classmate Chaim, and Tova and Atara, and I imagine Yitzchak, they all learned together on one level. The Rebbe did more than that. Fine. But tell me, you're a chassid. And we've spoken about it, and we'll come back to it. Well, what's the high point of being a chassid? The Rebbe, a fabrengen, hitva adut b'ivrit meduberet. There's no word in English. They use the fabrengen word in English. That's the high point for chassid. We spoke about in certain courts today. Every little mitzvah, you watch the Rebbe, Hadlakat Neirat, Chanukah, burning chametz, all right? Chabad is more sophisticated. Rebbe burning the chametz is no different than Yomos burning the chametz. But if I'm praying in where thousands view the Rebbe and Divrei Torah and Alachayim, in the 70s, the Lubavitcher Rebbe introduced something unheard of. We alluded to it last night in Rebbe Chil Yaakov Weinberg's tshuva, Fabrengen for women. Are you familiar with that? Where all of 770, thousands upon thousands of women, the Rebbe sitting up front, with only his Gabbai, Rav Chadakov, Mordechai Chadakov, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, only the main Gabbai next to the Rebbe. And there's the Rebbe Fabrengen with the women, 100% Sichat on topics that are our interest and challenge to Jews in general, but women in particular. Jason, you have to admit, innovative, responding to the moment, to the times. And this will explain to you, and we've said it more than once, we said it earlier today, the shluchat that the Rebbe created, it's beyond comprehension. Sometimes the shlucha is more of a personality and more capable and more influential than her husband, the Shaluch himself. And this is the Rebbe. The Rebbe empowered them. The Rebbe gave them that feeling that men and women together, that's our future. That was his answer. And this is why Chabad has progressed and continues and thrives. And just this week, we're talking about the convention of the shluchim, that no one knew how they're going to get 5,000 plus shluchim into the famous picture they take every year. They just took it this week. You can see the picture already on all the websites, and all the Chabad websites, and all the Torah websites, and all the Jewish websites. I imagine in New York, it probably made the newspapers as well, the secular newspapers, the general newspapers. I don't know if they got all 5,000 in. I saw the picture. It's like on the sides cut off, but what hell, just to set that up, to get the grandstands ready. Wow, and what will be in 20 years from now when we'll be talking of 10,000 shluchim? Wow. And it's all over the world. Part of the conversations I've had with students this week, I have one student who is one of the overseers of kashrut factories that the OK, that's the Chabad, the laboratories, the OK, organized kashrut, it's the Levy family, it's a Chabad Hechsher, basically. And no, where do you think he spends most of the year traveling? His family is here? Japan. I said to him, I know in China there are 50 factories under supervision. He says, yeah, but I'm in Japan. I'm the overseer. You know, he visits, it's like the OU. There's someone on top of the mashgichim that checks regularly that they're doing their job. So you see, the Rebbe innovated. These questions affected all of us. But it's fascinating to see the way the Rav went and the way the Rebbe went. Yes, Morty.
When the shluchim are all in New York, the shluchot are still home.
Right.
They run shop. I've been there.
Right. They
don't make kiddush or anything, but they run the meals.
Right, and then the shluchot come for their own convention, and I've heard some of them speak. I couldn't do better. I got to be honest with you. I think I know how to speak. I think I can handle an audience. I think I can. You read in the new in the Rakafat Aron that I hope will be out within the year. So Dr. Weinstein writes in the introduction that in writing up the Shayurim, he just remained with the Torah. He left out the comments, the insights, the jokes, but he says, sometimes there is as important as the Torah, he says, in shaping Talmidim, in getting an audience interested, but he says, I'm just writing up the Divrei Torah. But I've heard these women speak, they can tell a story. Well, by the way, they'll talk about the Mumma. That's the Surah we were referring to before Moshe Surahs. That's the Mumma. That's the Mumma. She played a big role. You see, when these, I'll just say in parentheses, when those Jews got out of the Soviet Union right after World War II by claiming they were Poles and they had false documents and what went on and the Richa, to use modern Hebrew, they gave a tremendous shot in the arm to Chabad because it filtered down. They went to Israel, they went to America, and these were people who suffered under the NKVD. These were people whose parents were executed. These were people who had brothers or sisters who died in exile, and their Mesirat Nefesh ultimately may have created the movement of Shluchim. It all comes together. There's an impact. If they could do what they did, then we can go to Thailand, to Hong Kong, and be shluchim of the Rebbe and build Yiddishkeit. Okay? So this is the way the Rebbe met the challenge. Hadlakat Neirat, the Yorech HaShulchan, and Fabrengin for women.
How often did he do this?
It was a few times a year. I don't know if it had an exact schedule. When the Rebbe was ready, he said, we have to have something for the women. And the minute the word went out, thousands would come on a few weeks' notice. Everyone would arrange to travel in. I've seen pictures of it. Barry Liebman, you know Barry. So his daughter Renee, there's one picture there where she's right up front presenting the Rebbe with a gift from the women. I think it's a sefer or maybe a clay kodesh, but it's a beautiful picture of Renee right up there handing it to the Rebbe. And listen, the Rebbe dealt with women, you know, with the dollar bills. He dealt with the women just as Satmar used to go crazy. They would see these pictures of the Rebbe giving a dollar bill to a woman. They would put up Paschweilers, the Rebbe shaking hands with women, you know, etc., etc. The Rebbe had no difficulty. Like the Rav, these were people who respected women. 100%. No difficulty. I remember my neighbor, Rabbi Yeshua Hutner, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, the great rabbi, first cousin to Rabbi Yitzchak Hutner. Rabbi Yeshua Hutner, when my daughter saw that advertisement that if you are a college graduate and can learn a Daf Gemara and religious, we're beginning a new program to create lawyers for rabbinic courts, female lawyers, Tarnut. So my daughter saw the ad and she applied. Why did she apply? She was already working on a master's in Hebrew and English literature. She was teaching at Chorev. Because there had just been a big sichsuch where she lived at that time, right off Rehov Pamach, was a polyaguda housing development. And they wanted to expand, and one neighbor was opposed, and they went to Basement. They went to Basement. And it went through all the but they did him, and then he appealed, that man appealed, because he lost, and it went to the Beit HaGadol Irurim. And my daughter was very fascinated by the process. So now she needs a letter that she's religious. So I don't want to tell you who she asked, and they said no, they were worried stiff, it's changing Judaism, one person, a second person. So she asked Malcolm, asked my wife, she said, Malcolm said, you know something, ask Rabbi Yeshua Hutner. Went to our neighbor, he gave her a letter. Wow. Obviously, she not only got in, she was the first graduate. So people always ask me, why was Rav Hutner so different? And I said, you have to know his life story. I put it together later. I knew the first part. His first wife was the daughter of a Chassidic Rebbe. She was the Pshtetchtinsa, the Esh Kodesh's niece. She became the Skan Menachel of the Mishlar HaPnimia. She died young. Capable woman. I didn't know her, but I heard she was a ball of fire. His second wife, you knew. No? Rebetzin Batsheva Soloveitchik, the widow of Shmuel Yaakov Soloveitchik. She was an Isha Gedola. What does that teach you? He respected women. He could handle women who were geniuses, intelligent, capable, bright. Then I read Professor Yaffa Eliach. Mean anything to you? She should only have her foolish name, and she's out of it today, I understand. She did a doctorate, then she did postdoctorate research on the city she came from, Ishishuk. Did a beautiful volume. What a book. No, who ran the city? Rabbi Lutner's grandmother, she was the Rebbetzin. She ran the city. The Rav was Nechbal HaKelim, sat and learned. The whole city knew that the Rebbetzin ran the city. These are strong women. The Rav, you knew? HaRabbanit Tanya? You knew the Rebbetzin. When someone called and asked for Dr. Soloveitchik, she said, which one do you want?
She said, speaking.
Speaking, correct. I heard you say, which one do you want? But you say, speaking. The Rebbe's wife, understand? The moment of his day was the midday tea with her. So that's the Rebbe. Okay, now, we'll just start, but it's a fabulous document. We have to be very thankful to Chabad that everything the Rebbe did was recorded, was videoed, basically. It's a great gift for future generations. I can tell you in parentheses now, I don't want to elaborate, but what's your first name?
Michael.
Michael. Michael is my wife's cousin, you should know. He's a son. So we have people here who know the family going back. One second, where was I? The Rebbe. Yeah, so there's a downside to it. I'll tell you what the downside is, Natan. The Rebbe can live on forever. In one respect, the Rebbe has never died. Okay? I don't have to go any further. A Talmud and his wife took us out, a dear Talmud took us out to, I think it's called Kasbah Deli, Deli Kasbah, what's it called? So on the Upper West Side. And again, if you listen to the news, you're not allowed to eat in these places. It kills you. But what can you do? We're all human beings. So we go out to the Deli Kasbah, and on either side of the restaurant, which is noisy enough, is the Rebbe giving sichat on either side. So Rebbeinu Shloilem, he's right here now. You go into 770, turn to your left, there's the Rebbe giving a sicha right in the entryway. So you see, it's good and bad. But the good part is, you have, oh, halavai, we would have the Rav giving a Yotzai cheer in the 50s, in the 60s, into the 70s.
It was all tapes.
Well, B'sherim Zeichlaba Murray, you have some of them, But halavai, we would have the Rav and his dramaticness and his telling a joke. That's not in the written Sheirim. They left it out, unfortunately. But what can we do? Life moves on, and you have to have a new generation. And one day Michael Sohn will be giving a shir better than Rakefet. I don't want to say better than my Rebbe, but that's what we hope Torah will continue. So we have everything the Rebbe more or less said, did, recorded. It's good, but it has a little bit of a downside. But we'll leave that for a shir many months from now.
Well, for example, Jonathan Sacks put out a book, which is Sichot of the Rebbe translated into English.
Yeah, no, Beseda. Who published it?
Keyhart
published, very nice. Jonathan Sacks just gave a talk on Orthodoxy, modern Orthodoxy. It's on the blog today of Heschel Meredith, Emet V'Amuna. Every word that he said, I said at this very desk. I couldn't believe it. Exactly my thinking, and exactly yelling at the audience, don't call me modern Orthodox. Modernity, you can't be religious and be modern. He develops the theme, I couldn't believe it. So Jonathan Sacks, kol hakavod. But the Rebbe, everything is there. Now, what I'm holding in front of me is a book that came out this past year, At Alit. That's from what we sing Friday night to our wives, Eshet Chayil, At Alit Al Kulan. At Alit, you're the greatest. Otsa Sichot Me HaRebbe Mi Lubavitch L'Nashim V'Na'arot. And it's a collection of talks the Rebbe gave to women and younger girls. Na'arot? Teenagers, what would be a good English translation? Na'arot. Teenage girls. If there's nothing better, we'll stick with that. This appeared in 2014, and I put a copy of it upstairs in the library in the conference room. Now, what I want to quote from is page 267 on that chapter, that particular chapter. Why? Because it's a meeting of the Rebbe with the Belzer Rebbe. When the Belzer Rebbe came to New York, he came to New York quite a few times. The gossip here is that the reason he came to New York, as you know, the Belzer Rebbe married in 1948, he was born in 1948, he married in 1967. It was, as I recall, right before the Six-Day War. A shidduch was arranged with the Vishnitzer Rebbe's daughter, and this was the Belzer Rebbe. Again, we spoke about it in great depth many years ago. This was the Belzer Rebbe that was the whole future of Belz depended upon this little kid. He was the son of the Bugurio Rebbe, who was the younger brother of Rabbi Aaron Rokach, who was the Belzer Rebbe, the son. They were both the children of Rabbi Yisachar Dov Rokach, and here this kid was born in 48. He had a sister born in 49, I believe, and his father died a young man a year later. The younger brother died about 6-7 years before the older brother, who was much older, the Rabbi Aaron Rokach, the Belzer Rebbe. And I remember I told you that they took the kid out of his mother's hands, and it was not easy for her. She was a survivor. She was basically a Mizrahiite, a very erudite, modern woman. But she recognized that the Chassidim wanted to raise the kid when he turned 7-8. They wanted to give him a chinuch in Yerushalayim. The elder, the Belzer, those that survived. And they made the shidduch. He was 18 years of age. He married the Vishnitzer Rebbe's daughter. The wedding was in Bnei Brak. I've told you more than once, for that wedding a song was composed, which everyone sings until today. Simin Tov, or Mazel Tov, or Mazel Tov, or Simin Tov. Simin Tov, you recognize it? Yehei Lanu. That was written for the wedding of the Belzer Rebbe. Now, they had a lot of trouble having children, and finally they had a son, and that son has many children, and now they're already grandchildren. So Belz continues. A Litvak looks at this, he doesn't understand it. By the way, Morty's wife's father was a Talmud of Rebaran in Slutsk, before America. You follow? These are the Tziviaks that I told you about, their connection to your wife's family. So a Litvak looks at this and he laughs. What's the big deal? So you find the Rosh Yeshiva. But to be a Hasidic Rebbe, it has to be in the blood. We've spoken about it many times. So a lot of hope was put on the Belzer. Now the Belzer visited America a number of times. I need not tell you the rebirth of Belz is very dramatic and also well-nigh miraculous. It's beyond belief today. Tens and tens and tens of thousands of Belzer. It's not Chabad, doesn't have a world impact, but it certainly is a very powerful Hasidus, and not as insular as Ger. It's interesting. Belz has a little bit reaching out. It's not as insular as Ger. They're integrated on the Israeli society. Well, on that degree, both Belz and Ger are integrated. But it's a very fascinating study of who the present Belzer Rebbe is and what he has accomplished. So in one of his visits to America, he comes to visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and the entire conversation is recorded. And what is the conversation about? Teaching women Torah. The Belzer Rebbe walks in and he informs the Lubavitcher that right before his journey to America, they established a school for girls. Now, what does he mean? What does he mean, a school for girls? That this is going to be a regular school, and as you know, women don't have to learn Torah around the clock. They're not obligated like a man. So even in the Bata Yaakov in Israel, the secular curriculum for girls is infinitely better than what the boys get in the Talmud Torah. It's with a core curriculum and even beyond. And I can testify that when I started teaching in the Israeli division of Michalar in 1971, I was shocked by the graduates who then were from some Beis Yaakov graduates and Lustig graduates from the Petach Tikva area, came to Michalar. Today those girls don't come anymore because the chasm is too great in our world, unfortunately. But they came to Michalar, and I was amazed how well these girls knew English. As a matter of fact, when I would, remember I was in Olech Hadash, I came in Aliyah 69, And essentially from 69 to 71, I worked in English-speaking surroundings. The encyclopedia, English had to be your native language to work there, the Judaica. And even the Israelis who worked there had to know English very, very well. They were raised by parents who were raised under the British protectorate here, and they knew English quite very well. But BMT began 69, but there too it was an English-speaking environment. So at times I would stumble or struggle for a word. And these girls, I say, Kvot HaRav, Tagid Etzer BeAnglit. And they would translate in 1 second into Hebrew. I remember one word, crutches. No, what's the Hebrew word for crutches? Kabayim. No, in B'nai Akiva in America, they taught me the word kabayim. Whoever saw crutches, thank God, a young person doesn't see crutches. And these girls, crutches, multilithic, Rav Goniyot, this was taught to me. So I was amazed, and they told me this is the education they got in Beis Yaakov, in Petach Tikva, a good, solid education. So the Belzer Rebbe is telling the Lubavitcher Rebbe, we just opened an advanced program for women under the auspices of Belzer Chassidut. And they get involved in a whole discussion, which we will see next week. What's fascinating about the discussion, the Lubavitcher Rebbe's viewpoint very much parallels the Rav's viewpoint. And we'll call your attention to it next week, Be'ezrat Hanotein La'ya'ov Koach. Okay, first of all, let's review, and I have a lot I have to give out. Number one, we thank Vic Snow for giving us valuable rain today and dedicating this shiur in honor of, I guess, the Rebbe and the wonderful students who come. So on behalf of YUTorah.org, we say it is deeply appreciated. Now the freebies. Number one, did you see Shabbat B'Shabbato? I have to tell you, this, leaving out Rabbi Rosen, who saw, I taught with him in Michalah in the 70s, leaving out his viewpoints that I always find an echo of my own, Tanayin Hara, but there's an article here by a Talmud of Rabbaron Lichtenstein. This article should be required reading for everyone. And it deals with the slavery, it deals with the scandals. He attacks Rabbi Metzger. I mean, it's unbelievable. I told you that they can prove Rabbi Metzger took $160,000 for phony Geirut. Here the figure is $260,000. So I'll have to wait and see if there's no plea bargain, what comes out in open court. But he's very depressed with what happened with Rabbi Metzger, who was elected chief rabbi. And he went to Rabbaron Lichtenstein, and he says to Rabbaron, Rebbe, what kind of generation is this with so much scandal among the rabbis? And Rabbaron laughs at him and says, what did you just wake up? This is nothing new. And Rabbaron tells him the following story. His grandfather, must be his father's father, was a sheikhet, and he knew Rabbanim and Ishecht and various cities. And he warned Aaron when he was a little kid, whatever you do in life, don't be a rabbi. 50% of them are pure fakers. So it's a very fascinating article. And all I can tell you is in my research in Reb Lazer Silva, I cry when I say this. Anyway, I was very fortunate. The man who was secretary of the Agudas Rabbanim from time immemorial and ran the Agudas Rabbanim was a Palestinian who wound up in America, a very intelligent Jew, Mr. Jacob Palestine. And believe it or not, he came back to Israel in his old age, lived till over 100, lived two blocks from my house. He lived on Palmach, I lived in Rav Berlin. I would interview him regularly. I later taught his granddaughter in Michlava, the American section. So he told me the following story. He said, my son went to medical school, and I don't want to mention the name of the rabbi, was a big shot, my goodness, right, but his son went to medical school. My son brought sandwiches from the house, and his son went over and had the ham and cheese sandwiches right in front of my son. So the rabbinate is a difficult, difficult area to get involved. But I don't know if it's if it comforts us or doesn't comfort us. Evidently, people like that Metz guy, I don't want to use any title, is nothing new to the Baron Lichtenstein's family heritage. Next, some very interesting books have come out on Chabad. Jewish Enrichment Center, it's by Rabbi Chaim Dalfin. A volume just came out, one on a rebuttal of the Satmar Rebbe's Ala Galula V'Al HaTemura and the Yoel Moshe. I know the volume, it just came out. If you read Hebrew, this is rabbinic Hebrew mixed with Matan Hebrew, very, very important. In addition, in English, a volume was put out by Rabbi Chaim Dalfin on the real Shlomo Kalbach. I'm halfway through it, very, very fascinating. And Lakewood, Rabbi Aaron Cutler, the Riatz, the fight over Shlomo and his twin brother, Eli Chaim. I knew Eli Chaim intimately, been the rabbinate together. I knew his wife, Hadassah, and the Shlomo I knew as well, but a little bit from afar. English, English. Now, if you're interested, these books can be gotten, he writes me either at Pomerantz or online, www.jewishinfo.org. If that makes sense to you, you're smarter than I am. If you recall Dr. Samuel Schmidt, who we spoke about a year or two ago, visiting Europe for Reb Lazer Silver, here is an article that appeared in a volume called Inyan. The only thing lacking, it's a very beautiful story here with this lady that he saved. The only thing lacking is what I told you in class, the heart of his meeting with Reb Chaim Meiser, which is in here. But calling him Reb Shmuel, the lady who wrote this article, you was a lady, doesn't appreciate it. That is not here. Yeah, it's a lady, Rachel Licht. But it's an interesting piece. Articles, if you don't believe me about the bathrooms, what's going on in America, here are two articles from the New York Times on Illinois, on Texas, on what's going on with transgender bathrooms. This is a fascinating article on a lady in China who did her PhD about the Shoah and China and how it affected them and what happened in Shanghai. And she had to learn Hebrew and Yiddish to be able to do a proper doctorate. Most interesting, two articles, New York Times, both are the same, on religious arbitration. Scripture is the rule of law. It deals with the Baisden, but that's very small, that part. It deals with Christians signing up for Christian arbitration. Very, very fascinating. And finally, I believe I'll give this to Rabbi Rubin to drive me up the wall, a selection of articles on feminism and all that's happening. Rabbi Rubin, are you interested in my folder?
Yes.
It's all there for you. To my dear students, next Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up with Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg. We go back to the Mishnah Halachot. We quote and go into a very famous tshuva from the Chatam Sofer. We wind up with David. We wind up with contemporaries at the end. Rabbis, David Holzer. Take out the rabbi, I don't need titles. Aaron Rakefet, put back the rabbi, Nussin Kamenetsky. You will not fall asleep next Sunday evening. And I'm very happy to mention that Vic's name will still be Vic Snow. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.